smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The other day I was in the locker room at the gym and an employee came frantically running through asking if anyone had left their dog in the white SUV that was parked outside. She was really in a hysterical state, said the dog might die if left overheated any longer, and that she and others were considering breaking a car window to save this dog. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome once again to the Good Dog Podcast, where today's topic is keeping dogs cool during the hot summer months. My guest is veterinarian Dr. Eric Barkas, who provides advice and information on VetBlog, which is on Dogster.com. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Joanne. Nice to be here.
Well, it is nice to be here with you. So how dangerous is it to leave a dog in a car? Was this woman overreacting, or was this very real?
Especially if it was a warm day, I think this woman was not overreacting at all. The danger to a dog left in a parked car is incredibly high, and people are generally aware that the danger is high if there's a high ambient temperature or if it's sunny. But even on relatively cool days, it can get astoundingly hot in cars. And even on cloudy days, it can get hot in cars, especially if the clouds burn off or if it has been foggy and the fog disappears.
Just as an aside, is it reasonable, actually, in a situation like that to save a dog or attempt to save a dog by breaking a car window? I know the advice is to call the local SPCA or Humane Society, but if you get the sense that a dog is really, you know, ready to pass out, what's your take on that?
Well, I actually do think it is pretty reasonable, especially if the dog is in distress. And my understanding is that about a year ago in California, a law was actually passed which allows... I'm certain that it allows police officers and emergency workers to break the car window in situations like that. I'm not certain that it allows lay people to break windows, but I think that very few district attorneys would be likely to prosecute you if you broke a car window to save a dog or a child, for that matter.
Right, and I'm thinking that if someone came along and saw that their dog was being saved from death, I can't imagine that they would sue over a broken car window.
No. I have a hard time fathoming that person, and they probably have no business owning a dog in the first place, I would say.
Well, before we leave the topic of leaving dogs in cars, because we all do it for a minute or two here and there, how long is too long and how hot is too hot?
Well, it really, really depends upon the circumstances. You know, just the other day I was out and I left the dog in the car for several hours, but it was in a covered parking garage where I knew there would be no heat reaching the dog, and left the windows cracked and he was fine for several hours. It was no warmer in the car than it was outside, and it was quite cool outside. But where you really have to be worried is if the car is not in the shade, or if you lose the shade, for instance. People might park their car underneath a tree and assume that the dog is going to be in the shade and then go off for a couple of hours, and then the sun moves and the shade is no longer covering the car. And at that point, it can take just a matter of minutes for the car to heat up to hundreds of degrees. Well, not hundreds of degrees, but to well over 100 degrees, which can overheat the dog in a very short period of time.
So what happens when a dog gets overheated in a situation like that?
Well, he starts by becoming just simply uncomfortable. He'll begin to pant and may display signs of agitation. But over time, what will happen is his core body temperature will start to elevate. He may become dehydrated through excessive panting. And then as his body temperature becomes higher and higher, he becomes at risk of damage to organs such as his kidneys or even his brain. And so it is a very serious situation as they begin to overheat.
One thing that I do is always leave an open container of water in the car when I leave Lulu for, you know, anything more than a few minutes of time. Does that help the situation?
Absolutely, that's a good idea. And assuming that we do not get to extreme temperatures in the car, drinking water has the same effect for dogs as it does for us, and that it can cool them directly. As well, many people don't realize this, but panting physiologically is very similar to sweating. So when a dog is panting, they're actually cooling themselves by evaporating water from their windpipe and their respiratory system. And so panting can dehydrate a dog in exactly the same way that sweating dehydrates us. And if you leave water for your dog, that does help to prevent that dehydration and help to promote cooling of the dog. But make no mistake about it, you do not want to leave your dog in a hot car, even if there is plenty of water there.
Is humidity a factor, Eric?
Absolutely. For the exact same reason that humidity is a factor for us, panting is more effective in dry, dry climates than it is in humid climates.
So here's a wacky question for you. With humans, when we're really hot, submerging our wrists in cold water or putting, you know, cold, wet towels on our wrists is a real quick way to cool us down. Is there an equivalent for dogs? Can we, like, literally put their paws into glasses of ice water?
Well, you can. You can certainly cool their paws with cool towels. You have to be careful with an individual who can't state whether they really want you to be doing what you're doing. And I would not want to take a dog who had been overheated to the point where he was moribund or comatose and think that simply putting his paws into cold water might make a difference. But certainly, if the dog is acting as if they're very overheated, you can offer them the option of for instance, even getting into some body of water. You know, the dog that I love to play fetch with, when he starts to get overheated, will go and jump into the ocean and spend a couple of minutes cooling off that way. And so having access to a cool body of water, such as a swimming pool or even a kiddie pool, can definitely make a difference.
One of the things that I always do on the Good Dog Podcast is digress. So when you mention this about dog jumping into ocean, I just have to ask, and we'll get back to how to cool your dog in just a minute, but I just have to ask, what's the deal with that? Some dogs like to swim, others don't. Is it a breed-specific thing, or is it a dog-by-dog issue?
Well, I think that it is more of a dog-by-dog issue than anything else, although some breeds, such as Labrador Retrievers and Chesapeake Bay Retrievers, for instance, are certainly known for their love of water. I have certainly known dogs who are terrified of water. I've known Labradors who are terrified of water under all circumstances, and I've known...
Yeah, we call those wusses, right?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't go that far, especially not in the presence of the people that live with them, but...
Oh, sorry.
But I've also known teacup poodles who had no fear of monster waves, you know, out at Baker Beach, so...
Interesting.
It really is a dog-by-dog phenomenon, you know, and obviously you have to use common sense when you're letting your dog go into the ocean. They're just as subject to undertows and sharks and sea lions as we are. So
I've never had a dog. I've only had three dogs, and they've all been a mix that had some poodle in them, and none of them have been swimmers. So I've just wondered about that, if it was breed, or maybe I didn't introduce them to bodies of water at a young enough age.
That's possible. I think there's just a high chance that some dogs, just like some people, just do not enjoy swimming, and others do.
And getting them nose plugs won't make any difference, right?
Yeah, you can try getting doggy goggles. Maybe we should do a joint venture and market those together.
Snorkeling, right? Little fins.
Right. Well, I know there are dogs that surf, so what snorkeling could be next.
There you go. It's a whole new business for us. Now, what about keeping a dog's fur clipped short during the summer months? Does that make a difference in helping to keep them cool?
It certainly will. You know, the fur acts as insulation, okay? And, you know, some people might argue that the insulation would insulate the dog from the heat and therefore keep them cool. But dogs are warm-blooded just like we are. And so having an extra layer of insulation will, in fact, cause them to be warmer. Now, you know, certainly if you have a dog who has a very thick or very plush or very special coat, you know, certain double-coated breeds, for instance, you have to realize that if you do clip the fur, there's a chance that fur might not grow back properly, and that is a risk you take. And so you can certainly trim the fur of your dog to help keep the dog cool, but it's not necessarily the first step I would take, especially if your dog is not showing any signs of discomfort in the heat.
What about having a little extra girth around the middle? Does that make it tougher for him? I'm trying to be delicate here. I've already offended you once.
Oh, trust me, I'm not offended on this one. And actually, you know, obesity or having extra weight absolutely is a risk factor for overheating in dogs. The extra fat on the body acts as insulation, just as extra fur does. And the extra fat also interferes with their breathing in some cases. And because the whole panting system acts as their mechanism of sweating, anything that interferes with breathing can then interfere with a dog keeping itself cool. And along those lines, then, any dog with any sort of concurrent illness, you know, there are dogs that might have problems with their larynx. There's a condition called laryngeal paralysis, and there's another condition called tracheal collapse, or dogs with heart problems or any other major medical condition are going to be much more sensitive to the heat than our younger, healthier dogs.
So let's wrap this up with some tips for people. We have listeners all over the world, some I'm sure in very warm climates, some in places where summer is particularly hot and comes along with humidity. What are some tips that you can offer to dog owners for keeping their dogs cool and ultimately healthier in the summer?
Well, the most important thing I would say is to exercise common sense. If it's hot for you, then it's probably hot for your dog. You know, I've known dogs that I've seen Newfoundlands who were adapted very well to living in tropical climates, and I've seen little Chihuahuas running around in the Arctic, well, not the Arctic, but in Siberia, at least, in winter. And so dogs are very adaptable to an incredible range of temperatures, but you have to use your common sense. And if it is an unusually hot day in the area where you live, your dog should have access to air conditioning or at the very least shade. And I think it always makes sense to have to let your dog have access to as much water as your dog wants. Really, you know, your dog should have some choice in the matter as well. Don't push your dog to go out and into the heat if your dog seems like he would prefer to stay in a cool area, for instance. But really, allowing your dog to have access to areas that are going to be comfortable in terms of temperature is the most important thing I can recommend.
Eric, I need to know, what were you doing in Siberia in the winter?
My sister was doing a Fulbright scholarship in St. Petersburg, and so we decided to take the Trans-Siberian Railroad across through to Beijing in the middle of the winter.
Was this a good idea?
It was a very fun idea. It was an extremely cold experience, but the dogs that I saw in Siberia definitely made an impression on me because they were tolerating that cold a lot better than I was.
I guess so. So tell us a little bit about your column or your blog on Dogster.com.
You know, I've been working with Dogster and collaborating with them for several years, and it started off a while back as just sort of a weekly advice column where people would write in with dog and cat related questions. I also work with Catster, which is their partner site for cats.
Yeah, we don't talk a lot about cats on this show, but okay.
Yeah, well, just in case you got a cat, there is a site called Catster. But my column started off as just a weekly column, and then earlier this year we tried to expand it into in addition to just answering dog and cat health related questions, it became a daily blog where I would talk about, in addition to answering dog and cat questions, we would discuss interesting topics in the news related to animal health other features of veterinary medicine that I think might be salient to people with dogs and cats. And people are free to read it and to comment and to submit questions and to voice their opinions as well.
Great. And they can find this on Dogster.com?
Dogster.com, yes.
And finally, and I'm sure you get asked this question on a regular basis, Barkus really is your name?
It is, in fact, my real name. It's not spelled B-A-R-K-U-S, but it is pronounced that way. You know, when I first got out of veterinary school, I was offered a job at a cats-only veterinary clinic, and I decided that there's no way that could possibly work given my last name. So it just
wouldn't be right.
Wouldn't be right. Well, plus I love dogs too much for that as well.
So. There you go. Well, I thank you so much for this information, and I'm going to extend an open invitation for you to come back and visit us and talk about some other issues in the future on the Good Dog Podcast.
Well, thank you, Joanne. It's been a pleasure, and I'd absolutely love to do that.
Once again, Dr. Eric Barkus, veterinarian extraordinaire, and you can find his column and his blog on Dogster.com. Thanks so much for all your emails suggesting great topics for the Good Dog Podcast. If you could also send me suggested guests, if you have a favorite trainer or behaviorist or vet whom you think Good Dog listeners would like to hear from, let me know that as well. Once again, always, you can send an email to gooddog@smarterpodcasts.com.